And we'll just start over again here. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org. Remember and tell all your friends to remember to scroll down the main page of Freak Radio's website for the bright red oval atop the cartoon picture of the radio transmitter. That red oval will connect you to Free Radio's free streaming link. It is now 3:06 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Here on the west coast of North America, this is the Mideast Madness Show. My name is Ren Tawil. Mideast Madness for December 2nd, 2013 at 3:07. And if that jives with your handle on time and space reality, you will know that the show is live, so you can call in at any time, area code 831-427-3772. Again, that's area 831-427-3772. I have here in my hot little hand a print newsletter. It's an actual paper print from trees, even. Live from Palestine. This is put out by the International Solidarity Movement, Northern California Support Group. This one is for the summer of this year, Volume 10, Number 1. I don't think I've ever read from this at all to anyone, but it's would make for an interesting review of this past summer, now that we're almost out of autumn and into winter. I'm going to read at you anyway. Again, this is place stamped NorCal ISM, International Solidarity Movement. I know one of the co-founders of the ISM support group, located, headquartered in El Cerrito, California. The NorCal ISM is, anyway. And, oh, that is distracting, isn't it? I have my CD turned off, and I have the Winamp turned off, and still, I'm hearing music. I guess this, I must be hearing it through the walls of this building. Okay, live from Palestine, Land Day. Land Day is commemorated in the occupied territories of the West Bank. By Palestinian Grassroots Anti-Apartheid Wall Campaign, April 2013. The editor of this newsletter, by the way, is Mr. Jeff Peckrell. Various events were held throughout the occupied territories in the West Bank to commemorate the 37th anniversary of the Glorious Land Day. Stop the Wall implemented activities in lands which are threatened by confiscation and which are subject to continuous attacks by the Israeli occupation forces, or the IOF. Of course, the Israelis don't call themselves an occupation force. As far as they're concerned, they are the IDF, defense forces. But in actuality, they are occupation forces. So I will continue to refer to the IDF as the IOF. Continuing with the article now. In Nablus, the city of Nablus in the West Bank, the grassroots campaign organized a central activity on land threatened by confiscation near the Shave Shamron settlement. That is an Israeli Jewish-only settlement, which was erected on the land of the villages of Sebastia, Amria, Berka, and Deir Sharaf, northeast of Nablus. These villages are continuously subjected to settler attacks on farmers and land. That's Of course, Jewish settler attacks on Palestinian farmers, and land is often contaminated with sewage. Hundreds of people from Sebastia and nearby villages marched to this area before they were besieged by the large forces of the Israeli army and dispersed by force. Dozens of people were injured and nearly suffocated as soldiers let off a large number of gas canisters, and one citizen was wounded in the hand by a rubber bullet. Some young demonstrators were also involved in a fight with Israeli soldiers, and two young men were detained until the other demonstrators were able to liberate them. No details on how that liberation occurred. And let me just continue to clarify. Land Day has been commemorated, I believe, since the 1970s, 1974, if memory serves. So we're talking about celebration, which goes back, celebration is hardly the word, a commemoration which goes back several decades, some 39, 40 years or so, and celebrated both in occupied, Israeli militarily occupied territories and within Israel itself. And there's always some agitation, violence, even lives taken. I believe the original Land Day celebration was meant to commemorate the lives of six Palestinians that were taken from us by Israeli soldiers, armed Israeli soldiers, against unarmed demonstrators. So this is nothing new, neither the commemoration nor the mutually hostile activities that go on. Continuing with the article now. In the Ya'abud area west of Jenin, the National Movement and Stop the Wall, STW, organized a march to the wall and confiscated lands to support the people on Land Day. And in solidarity with the prisoners on hunger strike, the march started from the village of Umdar and Al-Kurjan, village council Al-Rayan. Al-Kurjan village council Al-Rayan, and went along the wall of annexation to the villages. The people raised Palestinian flags, images of prisoners on hunger strike, placards and banners condemning the wall and settlement policy. Dozens of olive trees were also planted in areas close to the apartheid wall, which constitutes more than 10,000 acres of village land. The apartheid wall constitutes more than 10,000 acres of village land in the West Bank, non-Israeli land, not legally anyway, with the participation of Anin Village Council, Stop the Wall, and village organizations. In Salfit, STW implemented a voluntary activity to plant trees in the villages of Rukin and Wadi Qana, adjacent to the village land confiscated for the benefit of the Ariel settlement. However, they were prevented from reaching this land where the tree planting was scheduled by the occupation army. The village of Brookin in the Salfit district has been turned into a waste dump for the settlements of Birkan and Ariel, which are linked by a sewage network and dump waste water into the village lands. In Bethlehem, the IOF, again, Israeli occupation forces, suppressed a demonstration by dozens of Palestinians at the checkpoint located in the north of the city by firing tear gas and sound bombs to disperse the demonstrators. Similarly, in Hebron, the occupation forces suppressed a demonstration to demand that the road between Hebron and the southern cities and towns be reopened. On March 29, this is referring to the spring and summer of 2013 now. March 29, the IOF used tear gas and water cannons to suppress the weekly demonstration in Hebron, which demands freedom of movement and the opening of the street connecting the city and the towns of Samu, Adalia, and Fawar refugee camp, which had been closed by Israeli occupation for the last 12 years. Dozens of Palestinian militants from different sites in Hebron and a number of international activists have performed Friday prayers and marched near the Iron Gate that closes off the main road leading to the town south of Hebron in the area near the settlement of Haggai to the south of the city. The army began firing tear gas among protesters in case they approached the gate that blocks off the road, and dozens of soldiers and border guards gathered to spray protesters with stinking water. The coordinator of STW in Hebron, Yusef Temeza, said, "We declare that today marks Land Day, and every day we stick to our land and our right to live in freedom and dignity. The repressive policies for dealing with aggressive occupation will not deter us, nor will the settlers' aims to close the streets, confiscate our land, and dump their wastewater on our farmland." End quote. Isaac Alabsi, an activist of the National Committee to Raise Barriers, said, "Protesters carry Palestinian flags and banners written in Arabic and English that declare our commitment to our land and condemn the closures. They chanted slogans about ending the occupation and the closure," end quote. The demonstrators announced they will continue their activities in the region every week until the road, which had been closed for about 12 years, is reopened. This road closure has forced about 150,000 residents of the area south of Hebron, that would be 150,000 Palestinian Arab residents of the area south of Hebron, to travel at least an extra 12 miles to reach their destinations inside the city. In the same vein, on March 28th, Stop the Wall participated in events on the ground in Hebron. Dozens of activists planted trees and cleaned the cemetery on Shuhada Street, which was closed by the Israeli occupation after the massacre of the Ibrahimi Mosque in Hebron in 1994. Yusef Temeza said they will continue to organize events and increase efforts to resist the occupation and its expansionist policies. In the village of Aqaba, Tubas District, Stop the Wall organized an activity to revive the Land Day with the participation of tens of Palestinian youths. The head of the village council, Haj Sami Sadiq, received a solidarity delegation and explained to them the suffering of the village and the scale of the challenges and legal struggle faced by the residents to stop the ongoing Israeli attacks on the ground and the rights in this region. Aqaba, the village of Aqaba, is considered a distinctive and successful model of popular resistance, especially after this tender submitted by the Haj Sami Sadiq, and although it has been hindered, the village has been able to grow and develop in its struggle against the occupation. The village now contains a school and kindergarten, a mosque, a factory for packaging herbs, a feminist foundation, a study center, a residence for foreigners, and a charity concerned with the affairs of displaced people. After a dialogue with the president of the village council and a visit to the village institutions, the young people from the delegations planted 37 olive seedlings to commemorate the 37th anniversary of Land Day. The seedlings were a donation from the Agricultural Relief Society. Furthermore, they also put up posters to remember the martyrs who were killed in 1976 in occupied Palestine based on the 1948 borders. So, Land Day occurred in 1976. That's the proper year in which six Palestinian demonstrators were killed by Israeli soldiers. Don't forget, my friends, you can call me here at area code 831-427-3772. This is the Mideast Madness Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which comes to you live every Monday at 3 p.m., 3 in the afternoon. Also, the weekend edition of Mideast Madness, a wholly separate show, comes to you via the Internet, this online radio service, every Saturday at 11 a.m. It is 3:21 this December 1st, 2013. Other articles in this issue of Live from Palestine include Life Near the Buffer Zone, Children Terrorized, Arrested and Held in a Military Prison in Israel. I will read that to you. A few weeks ago, I issued a report to my listeners about the treatment and torture of Palestinian children by the Israeli occupation forces. Here is yet another article on the same. Children terrorized, arrested, and held in military prison, in a military prison in Israel, written by Kelly Joyner, October 2012. Some 14 months ago, the Israeli government must honor its obligations under international law and end the continued arrest, detention, and torture of Palestinian children. According to reports by the Save the Children Foundation, the East Jerusalem YMCA Rehabilitation Program and Defense for Children International 2012, the Israeli military arrests 700 Palestinian children every year. Just checking something there. Right back with you. There are currently an estimated 280 Palestinian children in Israeli military prisons since the year 2000. The estimates, the AIC estimates, the AIC estimates that about 8,000 children have been arrested in contravention of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, CRC, to which Israel is a signatory. The mass arrest of Palestinian civilians, especially children, by the Israeli military is a tactic employed as collective punishment of the civilian population for resistance to the Israeli military occupation of the West Bank. This practice has been condemned by the United Nations. The Israeli military tactic, a practice condemned by the United Nations and the international community as a violation of international law and the Fourth Geneva Convention of 1949, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child of 1989, states that children under the age of 18 have the right to special protection due to their age and special care should be taken to safeguard their well-being. Israeli soldiers have often used Palestinian children as human shields, have shot live ammunition into crowds where children were present, have used deadly force to capture and arrest children who were throwing stones. Deadly force, says here. And have abused, tortured, and murdered children in their custody, according to Cook, Hania, and Kay, 2004. There is an utter disregard for the welfare of Palestinian children that is even evident in the manner in which they are arrested. Soldiers arrive in the middle of the night, and children are woken from their beds, marched outside, and forced to watch as their homes are ransacked. They are often blindfolded and handcuffed, and forced to stand or kneel for hours with no explanation and without charges being explained to them. Cook and ENK04. Even if they are not arrested at this point, the trauma to the child and his or her siblings is incalculable and inexcusable. Folks, this we're talking about the Jewish state of Israel, the nation of Israel, committing these crimes against indigenous native non-Jewish Arabs. Continuing, children who are arrested are defined as anyone under the age of 18, but many children in Israeli prisons are as young as 12 years old. And Israel has even arrested children as young as 9. As Ren breaking in here, I will point out that a close friend and colleague of mine who arrived a week or two ago from the West Bank, he's an American, he lives in California, but he often visits the West Bank, and toward the end of his visit there in the West Bank, where he was visiting Janine, I think, he reported to us, to his fellow colleagues on this matter, that a 5-year-old child was taken by the Israelis and detained. A 5-year-old child. Continuing with article. They are sometimes arrested for throwing stones, but a reason for arrest is not always given, and children are simply kidnapped from their homes, often in the middle of the night, and taken to an undisclosed location. The report also states that 90% of these children are victims of torture, ill treatment, pressure, and bargaining. Children are treated as, quote, ticking bombs, which strips them of their immunity from torture by the Israeli prison system and bypasses international law, the United Nations Convention Against Torture, 1984, states that the right to be free from torture is a non-derogable right, meaning that it cannot be taken away, even in times of emergency. The right to be free from torture. Additionally, the CRC states that it is never permissible to torture a child for any reason in any circumstance. Israel is a signatory to both conventions. The report goes on to state that upwards of 90% of children imprisoned by Israel suffer from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. This condition is most commonly experienced by soldiers serving in wartime or victims of violent crimes. I'm right here with you, folks. Okay. I have been in the process and shortly before I started this show at 3:02 this afternoon of recording and archiving one of my shows. This seems to have been done successfully. Getting this out of the way now. Very good. Continuing with the article, Dr. Mahmoud Sawil, head of the Center for Treatment and Rehabilitation of Victims of Torture, noted that one of the purposes of the occupation was to destroy the Palestinian population by denying children their right to live in dignity. I'm going to read that again. Listen up. Dr. Mahmoud Sawil, head of the Center for Treatment and Rehabilitation of Victims of Torture noted that one of the purposes of the occupation, the Israeli occupation of stolen Palestinian land, was to destroy the Palestinian population by denying children their right to live in dignity. Let's continue. Children's rights groups, including, and note that there are several reasons for the arrest and detention of children. Often the intention is to intimidate adults into submitting to the occupation or leaving the area. As in the mass arrests of children in East Jerusalem. There it was hoped that adults would be so frightened for their children's safety that they would simply abandon their homes and leave the area to illegal Israeli settlers. To leave that area to illegal Israeli settlers. Children who are arrested are often kept from contact with parents, family, and legal representation. Should charges eventually be filed, the proceedings in court are conducted entirely in Hebrew, and translators are not provided, so children and their families often do not even understand what they are being charged with. When I was in Palestine, and again, this was written by Kelly Joyner, in October of last year, while Kelly Joyner, was in Palestine this summer, 25 children were arrested and taken to military prisons. These children are often co-opted by the Israeli military through threats of intimidation against their families. It is not difficult to persuade 12-year-olds who are forced to watch as the military, as the Israeli military beats their fathers and ransacks their homes, that if they don't spy on friends and family, their lives will be in danger. This practice of turning children against their own parents should shock the conscience. I'm still mystified by the entire experience. Mystified because I don't understand how anyone can justify the destruction of another people like this. I don't understand how anyone can rationalize treating children like animals. And I don't understand how people who have suffered this same kind of treatment can then do this to others. I just don't, writes Kelly Joyner. I know this is common in history. The oppressed becomes the oppressor. The abused becomes the abuser. I know it happens, but I cannot really understand it. It is one thing to be so damaged that you lash out in fear and hatred in moments of passion. It is something else to coldly plan the destruction of another, to want it and wish for it and rationalize it to others. How can Israelis be simultaneously proud of the Warsaw Ghetto uprisings and call Palestinian children who throw rocks at tanks terrorists? They are the same thing. Both are examples of ordinary people performing acts of heroism in the face of oppression and tyranny. The scale of death of the Holocaust was much more massive, to be sure. But unchecked, I am not certain that similar numbers might not be reached in this case. Over 1,400 Palestinian civilians were killed in Gaza during the Israeli assault in 2008 and 2009. 400 of those were children. And Israelis are apparently fine with that, since there have been no mass protests in response to these atrocities. There are currently more Palestinians living in exile outside of Palestine as refugees than remain within the country. 7 million people are not allowed ever to come home. How can Israelis remember the boatloads of Jewish refugees posted in ports around the world and not empathize with the Palestinians? The hypocrisy is staggering. In July, a group of British lawyers and members of Parliament issued the results of a fact-finding mission to the occupied Palestinian territories in 2011. The report entitled Children in Military Custody quotes an Israeli military prosecutor saying, every Palestinian child is a potential terrorist. That according to an Israeli military prosecutor. This statement speaks volumes about the mentality of the Israeli military. These are no longer children who need protection, but non-humans undeserving of even basic rights. As Americans whose government and tax dollars support this regime, we have a responsibility to protect Palestinian children. We cannot allow these abuses to continue when perpetuated against the most vulnerable members of our human family. These are not potential terrorists, whatever their actions, they are children. This is Islamophobia and racism in its purest form, says author Joyner. Describing a child as a terrorist is beyond disgusting. It is reminiscent of the Klan members who celebrated the deaths of the four innocent African-American girls killed in the bombing of a Birmingham church in 1963. And make no mistake, that is exactly what is going on in Palestine. There is a reason that Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Bishop Desmond Tutu, and Alice Walker all support the Palestinian cause. It is because they are familiar with oppression and recognize it when they see it and are unafraid to name it. End of article. Kelly Joyner is an activist from Northern California working on issues affecting communities of color. In 2012, she spent the summer in the West Bank working with IMEMC. That is the International Middle East Media Center, IMEMC, working with IMEMC News, which, by the way, brings us our 3.5-minute headline snippet to Free Radio Santa Cruz every weekday at 4:55, immediately following Mideast Madness on Mondays and Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. They have a 10-minute segment on Fridays, the Weekend Review. Kelly Joyner, is currently working on research regarding Palestinian children in the occupied territories. Speaking of some big names on the topic of Palestine, here is a sample of their words. Alice Walker, 2012. And the unfairness of it is so much like the South. It's so much like the South of, 50 years ago, really, and actually more brutal because in Palestine so many more people are wounded, shot, killed, and imprisoned. You know, there are thousands of Palestinians in prison virtually for no reason. Statement from Alice Walker. Statement from Nelson Mandela, 1994. When the Palestinians are free, our struggle will be complete. Personally, I believe Mr. Mandela is fooling himself with that statement. At any rate, one more quote. Palestine belongs to the Arabs in the same sense that England belongs to the English or France to the French. Mahatma Gandhi, 1938, 10 years before the foundation of the State of Israel, Palestine belongs to the Arabs in the same sense that England belongs to the English or France to the French. Call to action. The International Solidarity Movement wants you to join them this year. Prior to ISM's foundation in 2001, live ammunition was the most commonly used weapon to quell Palestinian demonstrations. Did you know that? Live ammunition, the most commonly used weapon to quell Palestinian demonstrations, resulting in huge, huge casualties. And, of course, we're talking about largely, if not overwhelmingly, peaceful demonstrations, or at least unarmed demonstrations by the Palestinians. It says here, since its foundation, ISM has seen live ammunition become far less common over time, and the Israeli army now utilizes tear gas, sound bombs, and rubber-coated steel bullets. More often as alternative crowd dispersion techniques. This is largely due to the presence of international and Israeli activists. Also, Israeli activists at demonstrations. Something that the International Solidarity Movement, the ISM, has been central to. In a time of an increased need for international presence in Gaza and what looks to be an upsurge of violence in the West Bank, we call on international activists to join the ISM on the streets of Palestine. So indeed, ISM is calling for more volunteers. More information is available. Get your pens and papers out here. More info. Solidarity at NorCalISM.org. Let me just spell that for you. Solidarity, SOLIDARITY, then the at sign that you see in all these email addresses. Solidarity at NorCalISM. For Northern California International Solidarity Movement, NorCalISM.org. Also a phone number for you, area code 510-236-4250. www.palsolidarity.org is also another pertinent website. Speakers are available. ISM volunteers who have recently returned from Palestine are available to make presentations to high school and college campuses, churches, organizations, and house parties, to name a few suggested venues. Okay, we shall put this one aside. For now, it's 3:44 this Monday, December 2nd. This is the Mideast Madness Show with Ren on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Area code 831-427-3772. And I don't want to let the dead air go for more than a oscillating waveform screen length here, so I have to say something. I've noticed recently on one very popular commercial AM radio station that the... Let's see. The AJC, I believe that is the American Jewish Committee. AJC has been doing spots on this particular commercial radio station, which are rather superficial in content. They're comprised mostly of reminding the world about what a noble and moral category of people that the Jews are in the world. I do not take offense at that, per se. I'm not going to contest it. Virtually all groups of people have good things that you can say about them. But again, the problem I have with the spot that the AJC is doing on this, on that particular radio station, is that it is rather murky, not concrete in terms of what their message is, other than talking about the goodness of the Jewish people and the Jewish heritage is. They don't even tell you who the AJC is. I'm pretty sure it stands for American Jewish Committee. And there are many organizations in the United States and in Canada, as well as around the world, that purport to speak for their national Jewish population. This is often hardly the case. Most of them seem to support or say they support Israel and the right for Israel to exist, etc., etc. But so many of the Jews who are within their venue, which is to say either in the United States as a whole or in particular districts of these organizations, don't buy it. They don't necessarily agree that Zionism is a good idea, or that it, or that Zionism brings to life the most sacred or even the most admirable qualities of the Jewish people. After all, Zionism is not a religious or theological movement. It is a political movement. The movement to acquire, keep, and maintain a national Jewish homeland at the expense of all other non-Jewish residents. That was stated in virtually those words some 125 years ago by the Zionist movement's primary founder, Theodor Herzl, in Switzerland in the 1890s. And it has indeed come to pass, and in some of the ugliest manners imaginable. Well, I have a paper here with information on another such Jewish-founded and peopled organization. This flyer that I have, a compact, succinct, four-page flyer, simply says at the top, "Stop the JNF campaign." www.stopthejnf.org. What is the campaign to stop the JNF? Stop the JNF is an international campaign aimed at ending the role of the Jewish National Fund dash Keren Kayemet Lizrael, or JNF KKL, to stop the JNF in the following points. 1. The ongoing displacement of indigenous Palestinians from their land. 2. The theft of their property. 3. The funding of historic and present-day colonies. And 4. Their destruction of the natural environment. The JNF's destruction of the natural environment. Why stop the JNF? The Jewish National Fund was created in the year 1901 in order to acquire land for a Jewish state in Palestine. The JNF KKL is most commonly known for its campaign to, quote, plant a tree in Israel in order to, quote, make the desert bloom. However, the trees are not planted in a barren desert, empty of inhabitants that Jewish people have come to populate and make flourish. Lands were and still are obtained from their Palestinian inhabitants through exploitative land sales, forced removal, or other apartheid state policies. With a capital S on state. By the end of the founding of the State of Israel, I'm sorry, again, by the time of the founding of the State of Israel in 1948, approximately two-thirds of the Palestinian population had been forcibly removed from their homeland. In addition to funding colonies, the JNFKKL planted and built forests, parks, and recreational facilities upon the ruins of hundreds of destroyed and depopulated Palestinian villages. These forestation projects served two purposes: to hide the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians and to prevent the Palestinian refugees from returning to their homes. These practices are still underway today. By erasing the traces of Palestinian homes and villages, the JNFKKL greenwashes the history of the colonial settlement of Palestine and covers up its ongoing displacement of Palestinians from their land and property. And again, here is a side box emphasis on certain facts. The JNFKKL owns 13% of the land in the State of Israel. Since 1953, the JNFKKL has operated as a part of the state. As a parastatal organization, the JNFKKL appoints nearly half of the board of the Israel Land Authority, the ILA. The ILA then manages both the JNF's 13% and an additional 80% of all land in the State of Israel. The JNFKKL in the State of Israel therefore control 93% of the total land in the state. That's just within the State of Israel. Next section. The JNFKKL practices racial discrimination. The activities of the JNFKKL are based on its discriminatory founding mission and constitution: the removal of indigenous Palestinians from their land and property, to hold land in Palestine an exclusive reserve for settlement and use by Jews. The JNFKKL's constitution explicitly states that JNFKKL land and property is not to be rented, leased, sold, or worked by non-Jews. The JNFKKL destroys natural environments and ways of life. The State of Israel and the JNFKKL destroy the natural habitat and way of life of the indigenous Palestinian people who have lived there for thousands of years. The JNFKKL has historically not been concerned about the environment at all, instead focusing on forestation and claiming land exclusively for Jews. The JNFKKL has thus inflicted grave harm on the natural environment in Palestine by its manner of planting, by its use of hazardous chemicals, and by planting trees that are not native to the land. This, by the way, I will point out that is the planting of tree of non-native trees and other plants, living substances, makes them what are referred as noxious life form or life organisms, non-native noxious plants. Not non-organic, but sounds like it's not exactly an organic operation, since, according to this, they use hazardous chemicals. Continuing now with this flyer. Over time, extensive planting of pine trees by the JNFKKL has killed off much of the native habitat, in addition to causing massive forest fires. In 1950, the JNFKKL drained Lake Hula in the interest of agricultural development. Once rich with diverse animal and plant life, today the area is a barren desert devoid of life. What is the JNF doing today? Today, the JNFKKL's project of displacement and forestation of stolen land continue, particularly in the Nakab or Negev Desert area in the south of the State of Israel and the Jordan Valley deep in the West Bank. A current initiative of the JNFKKL is a 10-year, $600 million U.S. dollar plan to, quote, to revitalize, redevelop, and preserve the Negev Desert. In these areas, quote-unquote, development projects in which the JNFKKL plays a central role continue to forcibly displace Palestinian citizens of Israel to make way for exclusively Jewish settlements and JNF parks and forests. And there is a picture here of a bulldozer running over the ruins of Al-Araqib in the Naqab, or Negev, proudly waving the JNF flag. A little confusing because the colors are primarily green and red with white lettering, which could easily be mistaken for an Arab flag. Okay. Al-Araqib is one of the long-standing villages in the Naqab that is currently being, quote-unquote, developed. Large police and military forces protect JNFKKL demolition tractors and trucks and guard JNFKKL workers. Residents have now been removed 20 times. They're removed and they come back again. They have no place else to go, in actuality. Some have moved to a nearby town. Others continue returning to rebuild their demolished homes and refusing to relinquish their land. When I said they have no place else to go, I mean they have no place outside of the Naqab Desert. Although some have, according to this, made it to nearby towns. In the Jordan Valley, deep in the West Bank, the JNFKKL is central to fulfilling Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu's public commitment to maintain control of the valley. This promise has never meant home demolitions, the theft of water. I'm sorry, I'll start again. The words just pop into my sentences, into my eyes and senses somehow. No, I'm reading directly from this. Again, this promise has meant home demolitions, the theft of water sources, increased military control, and destruction of agricultural land and olive groves. Once again, the JNFKKL is partnering with the State of Israel in securing and covering up stolen land and ethnic cleansing, planting parks, and building monuments on Palestinian land and property. Picture of a green, mostly green bulletin board. Billboard, outside, huge billboard, which, and the caption for the picture is, the Jordan Valley Meeting Point Project JNFKKL sign openly states that the site is a part of their land reclamation project. We're getting close to the end of this four-page flyer. The JNFKKL, which again stands for the Jewish National Fund Keren Kayemet LeIsrael, continues to serve as a global fundraiser for an Israeli ethnic cleansing, occupation, and apartheid. Each year, the JNFKKL raises over $60 million U.S. dollars in the United States alone. $60 million in this country alone. The U.S. Despite its role as a state institution of Israel, the Israel Land Authority, ILA, remember, and an institutionalized racism and apartheid, the JNF and KKL and its affiliate organizations enjoy charitable status in over 50 countries, and many also enjoy consultative status with the United Nations. The closer you look at how the establishment of the old Zionist dream, not more than 125, 150 years old, though. The more you look at the dream of Zionism, the more you see an intricate web, and this has certainly been the case with me, the more I study this and read the materials from a great variety of sources, including Zionist and Israelis and Jewish sources themselves who admit this stuff, the more you see what is indeed an intricate web of cooperation and collusion amongst the various organizations, between the organizations and the national state of Israel itself, and with one organization being covered in part by Israel's own laws and to a large degree colluded by, in effect, in cahoots with certain United States laws, including tax regulations and security partnership deals that the U.S. has made with Israel. In the end, for the native non-Jewish people, the Palestinians, is still the same. They lose out. They lose out. They lose out over and over again. They're stolen from. They're killed, wounded, have their lives and life and lifestyles severely disrupted, if not outright destroyed. They become refugees. They become refugees again. It's ethnic cleansing, pure and simple. And it's sanctioned by the United States government, the U.S. Congress, and in effect by the American taxpayer, because most of us are blind to what's going on, including, very unfortunately, so many American Jews blind to what is really going on, and supposedly in their name. Here's the last page of the flyer. How can we stop the JNF? Join the campaign in your region to stop the JNF. In addition to the ongoing struggles against the JNF-KKL in Palestine, the campaign is underway in Canada, France, Britain, and the United States. Help stop the human rights and environmental violations of the JNF-KKL by the following stated means. Revoke the charity status of the JNF in your state or country. This appears to be the spearhead of the efforts against the JNF-KKL. Revoke the charity status of the JNF in your state or country because it is false. It is a lie. They do not deserve it. Also, break all ties with the JNF. Educate others on the JNF. Sign this Stop the JNF call to action. To do this, go to, on your computers, on your internet connections, go to www.stopthejnf.org/call to action. Very easy to remember. stopthejnf.org/call to action. Finally, among their five stated ways to stop the human rights and environmental violations of the JNF, organize the Stop the JNF campaign in your city or region. More information about the campaign, visit them, stopthejnf.org, or email them at info@stopthejnf.org. That is the United States connection. Stop the JNF KKL. Yes, I've been reading a bit about them recently. Folks, it's 5 minutes after 1600 hours, 4:05 p.m., this Monday, December 2nd. This is the Mideast Madness Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. My name is Ren. I'll give you those phone numbers when we return. Another musical break. With Mideast Madness on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Freakradio.org. Click the red oval. It's 4:11 this Monday, December 2nd, 2013. Area code 831-427-3772. Call me, you'll be live on the air with me. Don't be shy. Practically nobody in the world is even listening to us right now. Take my word for it. I have the magic ears to know that that's the case. Don't be disgusted and turn off the show, though, just because I dared to say that. I'm actually trying to encourage people to call in, make this a more interesting show, so you don't just have to listen to my dull voice all the time. And my oh-so-dull Arabic music. From CognitiveLiberty.net. Now, I've told you about the way Israel's military and, in turn, how the government and people of Israel itself treat Palestinian children, like talking about white European types mistreating and abusing and sometimes killing Native American Indian children. What's the difference, hey? CognitiveLiberty.net. The taboo on boycotting Israel has been broken. Again, talking about the mistreatment of PAL children, little Arab children, and how the Jewish... How the Jewish National Fund... etc., carries out and even often initiates the dirty work of Zionism by usurping the land of Palestine from its rightful people. Two major focuses of keeping tabs on the activity of Zionist Israel. Well, you've heard of BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Against Israel, the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel. With Israelis abusing children and taking our land, the Palestinians' land in Palestine, coming to the fore, a movement has been building for a nonviolent, hit him in the pocketbook, because that always seems to be the one thing people understand universally, right? Money, boycott of Israeli culture and its academic community, so the world will understand that they cannot continue to go on with these kinds of activities with impunity. They cannot continue to go without meeting up with the scales of justice. Divestment from such corporations, who profit money-wise from their illegal occupation of Palestinian lands and the recolonization of those lands by Jews, and sanctions, thus. This is entitled, "The Taboo on Boycotting Israel Has Now Been Broken," by David Lloyd. Just published 2 days ago. Looks and sounds like a paradigm shift, if you ask me. What the... Okay. Again, published November 30th. Saturday. Last Saturday. Something extraordinary happened on Saturday evening at the American Studies Association's annual meeting in Washington, D.C. At a packed open meeting called by the ASA's National Executive Council to discuss a resolution to, quote, endorse and honor the Palestinian boycott. To endorse and honor the Palestinian call for a boycott of Israeli academic institutions, speaker after speaker rose to express strong support for the resolution. They urged the council to vote for it without further delay or deferral. And incidentally, there's a picture here in front of a smashed building that still has the sign up saying in Arabic and in English, "The American International School in Gaza." I remember seeing that 5 years ago when I was there, before it was smashed and bombed in 2008 and 2009 by the Israelis, by the Israeli massacre of some 1,400 almost entirely unarmed Palestinians who had no place to run or hide from the bombings. Picture of the building, and right in front of it, none other than Secretary of State Mr. John Kerry, standing next to a United Nations van with tons of news and photojournalist people around. Caption for the picture reads, "The American International School in Gaza, visited by then Senator John Kerry in 2009, he was senator from Massachusetts, is one of hundreds of Palestinian educational institutions that have been bombed by Israel." Hundreds of educational institutions that have been bombed by Israel. Ashraf Amrai, APA Images. Okay, continuing with article. Israel and U.S. complicity. Out of 44 speakers whose names were submitted in writing and then drawn at random from a box, 37 spoke in favor of the boycott. 37 out of 44 speakers. They range from senior professors to graduate students and even undergraduate members of the association. Let me just move this down here. You see, I got to make room for things on my computer screen so I can get at them more quickly here. Okay. Whoops. Well, that'll have to do. Just want to make sure I'm still recording. Continuing. All recalled the association's fundamental commitment to the study and critique of racism and the United States histories of imperialism and settler colonialism. Many made the connection between Israel as a settler colony and U.S. complicity in potentially and materially supporting its colonial projects. In doing so, several remarked that they were members of the association because its commitment to anti-racist and anti-colonial scholarship made it especially hospitable to their work. For them, the connection was self-evident. Between anti-racist work within the United States and solidarity work with the victims of a settler colonial project that has the fullest support of the United States. over and over, speakers refuted the charge that endorsing the boycott is a contradiction that engages in limiting academic freedom in the name of academic freedom. They pointed out that this assertion is simply false. In the face of a campaign of misrepresentation evidenced in the room by a, quote, frequently asked questions flyer opposing the resolution. That campaign implied that the boycott targets individuals on account of their national belonging or identity. If anything, the resolution stands to further academic freedom, in particular that of Palestinians whose access to normal scholarly life is continually infringed by occupation, blockade, collective punishment in the form of school closures, and the denial of the fundamental right to travel. No Israeli scholar would be denied the right to express or publish an opinion, attend a conference, do research, or travel wherever they wish. I actually walked into the studio with nothing to drink, no beverage of any kind whatsoever, so during the musical break, I went to the facilities here and filled up an old bottle, rinsed it out first, of course, with tap water. What a relief. My throat dries. Continuing with this article by David Lloyd, this is found through at cognitiveliberty.net, the taboo on boycotting Israel has been broken. Speaking without fear. But the most significant thing about this event was that already it showed that engaging the boycott, and even in discussion of the boycott, is an extension of academic freedom. Despite years of lawfare, L-A-W-F-A-R-E, years of lawfare in which pro-Israel lobbies and pressure groups have tried to shut down any criticism of Israel and refused to debate the facts, those who spoke at this meeting felt free to voice their opinions and their experiences without fear of harassment or recrimination. It was deeply moving to hear younger scholars, graduates and undergraduates, one after the other, express feelings of liberation and legitimation. They were finally able to speak and to hear others speak publicly about an issue that has for so long been the third rail not only of U.S. politics, but of academic discourse. Palestinian academic freedom is our freedom. Opponents of the boycott tend to focus on its potential impact on the relatively privileged Israeli scholars who will, in fact, only feel an impact insofar as they act as ambassadors for the Israeli state. For once, on Saturday, it was the actually restricted academic freedom of Palestinian scholars that was on the table. And it became clear that the extension of academic freedom to Palestinians is, at the same time, the extension of our own academic freedom here in the United States. In a letter to the National Council available at the meeting, opponents of the boycott claim to have some 50 supporters. The petition in favor of the resolution had already amassed 850. What is missing even in that huge majority of supporters is the large number of scholars who would have wished to support the boycott but dared not sign on for fear of intimidation or retaliation. Ending the blockade on debate. The American Studies Association, the ASA's open meeting was a clear indication that the time of fear and of the blockade on debate may be over, and that there is a new climate in which critical discussion of Israel's policies towards Palestine will no longer be taboo. But something yet more significant happened. The 50 or so opponents of the boycott claimed the support of, and I quote here, several former presidents, council members, and ASA award winners, end quote. The speakers in favor of the resolution did not appeal to such institutional or official authority, though many indeed could have. What they appealed to was a sense of justice, of consistency with our values. They invoked the principle of solidarity and the oppressed, as the ASA encourages, and what everyone recognizes is the very condition of anti-racist work. Time after time, speakers saw support for the resolution not as potentially divisive, but as an enhancement of the meaning and significance of their association and the relevance and value of scholarship itself. As one speaker put it, support for the boycott by the ASA would renew their belief in the meaning of scholarship itself at a time when we are called to an increasingly professionalized separation of our intellectual work from our moral and political commitments. Any association always runs the risk of becoming merely an institution with its protocols and procedures and traditions. As an institution settles into its routines, it ossifies and forgets the values that brought people together to form it. What happened at the ASA on Saturday night reminded us that an association is not just a means to certain professional ends, but a voluntary gathering together of people with shared intellectual values and commitments. To participate in that gathering was indeed a deeply re-energizing experience, renewing one's faith both in the possibilities of that particular association and in the capacity for intellectual work to be at once scholarly and engaged with the world. Yeah, this really sounds like the work of some great, perhaps shadily identified author. The wording of this has the flavor of being written by a professor, so that might be turning you off, but we're almost to the bottom of this here. Just hang in there. Almost done. It's the important thing is to get the gist of what he's talking about. I feel just encouraged to recognize the recognition of anti-racist work. Time after. Okay. Last section, attacks. Attacks. At the time of writing, it remains unsure what the ASA's National Council will decide regarding the resolution, though there is no doubt that the open meeting gave them a ringing endorsement should they decide to pass it. But already and predictably, attacks on the association have commenced. Based on past experience, few of the attacks will engage with the substance of the resolution or with the facts of Israel's ongoing denial of academic freedom to Palestinians and its relentless assault on the rights of a people to reproduce its cultural and intellectual life. By and large, Zionists have refused to debate and have ceded that ground to their opponents. Instead, they rely increasingly on other means, predominantly legal and institutional harassment, to close down debate, force student senates to rescind democratically approved divestment resolutions, or punish students and academics for criticizing Israel. There is no doubt that Zionist organizations have great power and the material resources to enable them to engage in a forceful assault on the American Studies Association. But in the intellectual world, they resort to force is not a position of strength. Saturday evening at the ASA, the American Studies Association, showed the power of reasoned and moral argument, and there is no going back from that. In the struggle for justice for the Palestinian people, a turning point has been achieved. This article was first published at the Electronic Intifada. David Lloyd, its author, is Distinguished Professor of English at University of California, Riverside. And it's 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here on the California coast. This Monday, December 2nd. Other than what I said about the loftiness of his choice of words, and rather, I think, some redundancy there in overstriking our heads with the same points over and over again, I believe he was a little too enthusiastic about the cause by giving this the title, "The Taboo on Boycotting Israel Has Been Broken." Thus, he calls the whole thing "Broken Taboo on Boycotting Israel Being Broken," but later on he admits that they had the council hadn't made a decision yet, and also says it looks as though we may have succeeded in breaking the taboo. So I don't want to take too much from the guy from his excitement about this rather noble cause. Following the article is a statement here, apparently by whoever forwarded this article. "Ethnic cleansing is wrong no matter where or what century it's committed in, or by whom," I would add. "Join the people of conscience, including Jews and Israelis of conscience, who decry Israel's latest mass cleansing, the Power Plan." There's a variety of links here. rhr.org.il. .il refers to Israel, the Israeli website, national domain. rhr.org.il/English, etc. Tevye angers Israeli government less than 24 hours to stop the transfer of 40,000 Israeli Bedouin. That's on the rhr.org.il website. Also, jewishvoiceforpeace.org, campaign/ the Power Plan Act Now, of course. And bdsmovement.net, stop the Power Plan. And help end Israeli apartheid. Please help spread the word. Where's my bottle of water? Oh, it's almost empty. Let me give you that phone number one last time here. One last time or two. Area code 831-427-3772. Folks, even you can call me about anything that you think is appropriate. I might even take a call from someone who's just plain-ass lonely. That's how I feel when I'm here alone in the studio. It should sure be nice to know that someone is listening. If you have any suggestions for how I do this show, my method of getting the method across to its listeners, as few and far between as they realistically are, give me a call and admonish me in front of everybody that you can count on one hand, maybe. I would appreciate the constructive criticism. 831-427-3772. 427-3772. Yeah. I've included on this same page an article that I came across by one of my colleagues, a good friend of mine, who was also a freedom sailor with the Free Gaza Movement. I and some 43 others successfully sailed into the port of Gaza City in August of 08. My friend here, Deborah Ellis, was not so fortunate. She and her co-activists attempted to sail out of port from Greece, the nation of Greece. They left port, didn't get very far. Mysteriously, but not terribly surprising to some, they were chased by Greek naval commandos, commandeered and forced to return to port. Everything had been on the up and up until then. They went through all the legalities of using the port facilities and being able to sail out of that particular Athens, Greece national port. Under proper authorities, everything was signed and set, and then all of a sudden, the Greek Navy descends upon them and forces them to return. How did that happen? Well, I'll tell you, it had a lot to do with Israeli pressure on the United States Congress to in turn put pressure on Greece, on the Grecian authorities, to effectively outsource pirate activity of commandeering, a nonviolent action, and they didn't even make it into international waters. They were still in Greek national waters. It's bad enough when the Israeli Navy stops by force and sometimes rams and nearly kills people in the process of other nonviolent activist voyages in solidarity with the Palestinians as they tried to sail into the port of Gaza City in the Gaza Strip. You see, after our successful voyage in the summer of 2008 and a few more following that, again to be counted on only one hand, the number of successful voyages, came this awful massacre, so-called Israeli-Gazan war that Israel committed against the Gaza Strip. And ever since then, no activist boat, no non-Israeli civilian seagoing vessel has succeeded in sailing into the port of Gaza. And Israel outsourced its pirate activities by handing the actual forcing of the vessel back to port to someone else, to the Greek authorities instead of the Israeli Navy. At any rate, okay, that's the story of Deborah Ellis and her participation in the ill-fated Greek attempt to sail to Gaza. She got far more action than I did in terms of up in front witnessing of the violence that's used against people, even when they use nonviolent tactics. Deborah's a real hero of mine. Deborah Ellis, back in January of last year, January 9, 2012, wrote this: attempted censorship of California State University professor. Keeping in mind that this is from almost 2 years ago, January of 2012, she calls this a call to action, take action now, article. And I don't know what, if this is Electronic Intifada or who, but their introductory comments here. Contact CSC Chancellor Charles Reed and demand Dr. Klein be provided his academic freedom and right to freedom of expression. Nobody's free until everybody's free. Quotation from Fannie Lou Hamer. Here's Deborah Ellis's article from 13 months ago. There is mounting pressure to silence another academic voice who speaks out against apartheid. We expect educational institutions to be at the forefront of educating and inciting action against social injustices, but when it comes to Israeli policy, those who speak up to injustice become the target of bullying, intimidation, and employment threat. The United States Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel, USACBI, is appalled by the attacks taking place against against colleague and organizing committee member Dr. David Klein of California State University at Northridge. That's down there in Southern California, I believe. Dr. Klein hosts an informative website that provides extensive resources concerning the global movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, BDS, against Israel, and material of particular information to the CSU, California State University, community. BDS was initiated by Palestinian civil society organizations in 2005, quote, to call upon international civil society organizations and people of conscience all over the world to impose broad boycotts and implement divestment initiatives against Israel similar to those applied to South Africa in its apartheid era. We appeal to you to pressure your respective states to impose embargoes and sanctions against Israel. We also invite conscientious Israelis to support this call for the sake of justice and genuine peace, end quote. In addition, Dr. Klein is one of the initiators of a faculty, student, and staff letter at California State University calling for a study abroad program in Israel to not be resumed, noting that it places Palestinian and Arab CSU students at a risk of discrimination based on race and ethnicity, and that it resumed the program at this time. Quote, would not reflect well on the CSU's commitment to the universal right to education. Israel has consistently violated its obligation under Article 50 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which requires the occupying power to facilitate the proper functioning of educational institutions in occupied territories. Israel remains the occupying power because it retains effective control in all these areas and exercises this control by making education difficult or impossible for Palestinians in a variety of ways, blockading, besieging, and bombing schools and universities, suspending delivery of books and educational supplies, restricting or barring the movement of students, teachers, and researchers to their institutions of learning, as well as to travel abroad for educational purposes. End quotation. For his commitment to Palestinian human rights and international justice, Dr. Klein has been the subject of threats, harassment, and disinformation campaigns labeling him and his website as, quote-unquote, anti-Semitic and demanding his voice be silenced and his website removed. Such demands seek to impose fundamental violations of academic freedom upon Dr. Klein and upon all university faculty and students who use the internet at their universities to communicate and support Palestinian human rights and global justice. While Dr. Klein is accused of anti-Semitism by organizations such as Never Again Canada and AMCHA, who seek to impose their pro-Israel, pro-Zionist politics upon the California State University, there is no content on his website that could even arguably be labeled anti-Semitic without the offensive conflation of Jews and Jewishness with the State of Israel, its government, and its motivating ideology, Zionism. Dr. Klein is, like USACBI, an opponent of all forms of discrimination, of racism and discrimination. Those who oppose racism, discrimination, and injustice have a responsibility to oppose it everywhere. Dr. Klein performs admirable and deeply anti-racist work in his advocacy of justice in Palestine. I didn't mean to stutter there. Let there be no mistake. I'll reread that last sentence. Dr. Klein performs admirable and deeply anti-racist work in his advocacy of justice in Palestine. This is far from the first occasion of organized pro-Israel lobbies and groups targeting faculty and students for their advocacy for Palestine. From battles over tenure faced by extraordinarily qualified Palestinian professors to unjust firings or demotions of faculty who have spoken in support of Palestine, efforts to intimidate professors are increasing. As Students for Justice in Palestine noted, of their own experiences across the country, quote, university administrators find themselves under intense pressure from the Israel lobby when pro-Palestine events occur on campus. It comes in the form of public smearing, alumni pressure, and frivolous lawsuits, as well as U.S. Department of Education investigations that seek to classify criticism of Israel as a violation of students' civil rights, end quote. Furthermore, administrators have become complicit in the silencing of student groups who dare to express solidarity with Palestine, including the notorious case of the Irvine 11, in which 10 Muslim student union protesters at the University of California, Irvine, were criminally charged and prosecuted for their nonviolent disruption of a speech given by Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren. Now, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren. It was either to the U.S. or the U.N. Can't quite recall for sure. Deborah continues to say here, we stand in firm solidarity and support of Dr. David Klein. We urge all supporters of academic freedom and Palestinian human rights to stand with him as well, and to contact CSU Chancellor Charles Reed at creed@calstate.edu. That's CREED at calstate.edu. And they're spelling Cal State here CALSTTATEEDU. There might be an extra T in there. I'll try the link in a moment here. To support Dr. Klein and his academic freedom, and the right to freedom of expression. Thank you for being one of the powerful. People power can change the world. Now let's try that link. I'm clicking, nothing's happening. Maybe that's only because this is a forwarding of another. Oh, no. Here's a link that appears to be working. We don't even really need this. Yeah, I think the point is, instead of my spending any more time on the proper spelling and ability for my listeners to get in touch with Chancellor Reed, keeping in mind that this article was almost 2 years old, I took it upon myself to find out what the latest is. On the Professor David Klein situation. And sure enough, I cannot quite... Maybe I didn't. I'm afraid I didn't keep that particular draft. I made some notes here. Okay, my friends, who knows what the current status is, but the reason I read that to you is for you to keep in mind that this is the price to be paid, the price of vigilance against the true oppressors, the price of speaking your mind, even when you are a noted professor in a state higher education institution, good tenure and good standing, even after the justifications I have given on this and many previous shows for supporting the boycott, divestment, and sanctions cultural and academic movement against Israel and against the state of Israel. As I've pointed out on these previous shows, they fight back and they often fight dirty. Or, if you don't want to see that as dirty fighting, at least appreciate the fact. Appreciate bullying when you see it. Appreciate intimidation in its many forms. I mean, appreciate in the sense of recognizing it and calling it what it is. Major U.S. BDS campaigns. A number of the targets of Israel BDS campaigns. Learn more at endtheoccupation.org/BDS, BDSmovement.net, and PACBI.org, PACBI.org. And obviously, by the way, that last article appeared in the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation website. Deborah Ellis is a resident of Santa Cruz County here in California. Major U.S. BDS campaigns. Ban Caterpillar. Caterpillar, the big bulldozer maker, the big, large, earth-moving yellow machines, sells weaponized bulldozers to Israel used to demolish Palestinian infrastructure, and that almost always means private Palestinian Arab homes, to demolish Palestinian homes. They have been demolished in the tens of thousands since 1967. Weaponized bulldozers. A weaponized bulldozer can merely be one that is outfitted with a protective bulletproof shield to protect the driver. I do not know nor claim that any of these so-called weaponized bulldozers have machine guns or other firearms mounted on them, cannons or whatever. But technically they are considered weaponized when they have bulletproof shields erected on them to protect the driver, the operator. Why should they have to do that if they're merely using them as bulldozers? Maybe they're using them in an offensive manner, destroying private property. Another campaign. Occupation is not green. Boycott SodaStream. SodaStream's main product site is located in an illegal Israeli settlement in the West Bank, just east of Jerusalem, well into the West Bank. I remind everyone, Israel's Jewish-only settlements in occupied territory are illegal to begin with. Indeed, the military occupation, carried to the extent that it has been after 45 years, is by itself is illegal under international law. But to steal the land of someone else and usurp its resources, use its resources, its water, land, minerals, and to some degree, the abused labor of native Palestinians in the course of manufacturing and distributing a product for consumer consumption around the world is illegal and it is immoral. SodaStream is that product that, you know, takes tap water and fizzifies it, carbonates tap water. That's what SodaStream is. Sold in several outlets throughout Santa Cruz County, they have seen a lot of resistance by BDS campaigners, including myself. Academic and cultural boycotts target efforts to whitewash Israeli crimes against Palestinians. Students pass campus divestment resolutions and run boycott. Oh, here, other specific campaigns. corporations that do business and profit from the occupation of Palestine. Veolia, dump Veolia, V-E-O-L-I-A. Veolia provides segregated services, folks, segregated services to Israeli settlers on Palestinian-occupied lands. HP, which stands for, is the icon for Hewlett-Packard Corporation. Little play on that here. HP, as in harms peace. HP provides and maintains electronics used by the Israeli army at checkpoints in the West Bank. Well, it's 4:55. That is the official end time. Don't forget, you can contact me at the official email address for the Mideast Madness show, MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's MideastMadness at G as in George, M as in malevolent, X as in xenophobe, GMX.com, the old West German website business there. Mideast Madness, GMX.com. I'll be with you again next Monday at 3 p.m. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. Write it down. Punch it into your little handheld computer telephone calendar there. Also, I will continue reading from Max Blumenthal's Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. Book just came out this year on Saturday's weekend edition of Mideast Madness, Saturday at 11 a.m. Tune in then. Tune in all the time. Support Free Radio, Santa Cruz, and farewell.